Okay, now to Syria. 5+ years of war there have produced a lot of bloodshed and uprooted millions of people. Bashar al-Assad is still president, though, and according to his many critics, he and his regime are still committing crimes against their own people. During the war there, that's included bombing civilian areas, but also using lethal gas on civilians, not to mention torturing and executing suspected opponents. But to actually have proof of all of that, proof that stands up in court, is another matter. Now, according to a story in The New Yorker today, we have that proof. It comes from some 600,000 pages of documents obtained by an independent group of lawyers known as CIJA. That stands for the Commission for International Justice and Accountability. Ben Taub wrote the story for The New Yorker.
So the Commission for International Justice and Accountability has these 600,000 pages, and most of them they smuggled out themselves. But a few come from a mole within Assad's highest level security committee called the Central Crisis Management Cell. This was a cell composed of around a dozen high-level regime operatives who Assad had personally appointed to handle the crisis in March 2011. And they would draft proposals for each security issue and send them to Assad by courier, who would then sign these directives and return them for implementation.
So could you imagine the documents from this crisis cell that Assad set up being the smoking gun in a war crimes trial against Assad? Or would there also need to be testimony from people who were there, who were tortured, that are still alive?
There would certainly be witness testimony, but the documentary evidence is the strongest point here. The internal regime documents are always the sort of hardest evidence because, you know, people can call into account the veracity of witness statements. They can question whether witnesses have been influenced by things they've seen in the press or by living in crowded refugee areas or something like this, and that narratives converge. But the documents are signed. I mean, these are documents coming from the innermost security committee. Basically, the head of the CIJA told me that, you know, when it came time to identify suspects, they weren't really looking. They didn't think they'd be able to trace this up to Assad when they started the operation. They just thought they'd see how high they could trace it. But when it came time to identify suspects, it was very easy because the names were all over the documents.
You know, one of the most kind of fascinating aspects of this story, Ben, especially after the leak last week of the Panama Papers, which was 2.8 terabytes, you know, fit it on a few thumb drives, I guess. But this was an analog leak. I mean, transporting literally pieces of paper out of Syria. And you say at one point that one man had 1,000 pieces of paper, pages, taped to his body as he crossed the Syrian-Turkish border. This sounds like a lot of very hard work.
Yeah, that's one of the things that made it so difficult and so dangerous is these documents are heavy. I mean, the head of the CIJA was telling me, look, like, think of a box of paper next to the photocopier. That's around 2,500 pages and it weighs around 20 pounds. They've extracted 600,000 pages. So you need cars, you need to know how to get through checkpoints, you need to do reconnaissance. It's incredibly dangerous and this material is incredibly incriminating. Even if you're in, you know, opposition area, because radical Islamists, for instance, they see a guy who has 100,000 pages of Syrian regime documents on him, and they're going to think either this is a regime spy who's trying to get this material to safety, or that it's someone who's working for the CIA or something like that. The concept of international criminal justice is kind of lost on them. So there's no way to sort of explain it away. You just don't want to be caught with this stuff.
Ben Taub with The New Yorker. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
Stephen Rapp is the former U.S. ambassador at large for war crimes. He's currently at the Hague Institute for Global Justice. I know you've had a chance to review some of these documents, Ambassador. As a war crimes prosecutor, what could you do with them?
Well, if we have a court to take them to, we could charge and prove cases against the top level of the Syrian regime for murder and torture as crimes against humanity and war crimes.
I mean, you're pretty well placed to talk about this. You worked on the case of Charles Taylor and war crimes in Sierra Leone. You're convinced that there's enough evidence here to prove beyond reasonable doubt that Assad himself personally authorized crimes against humanity?
Certainly. There's not any question. I mean, I led the prosecution of Charles Taylor, and I was earlier at the Rwanda Tribunal leading the prosecution of senior officials of the Rwandan regime in the genocide. And the kind of evidence that we have here linking the top level of this regime to these acts of mass incarceration, mass torture, mass murder of at least 10,000 civilians in Syria is far stronger in terms of that direct connection than we had in those other trials. And we generally prevailed. Certainly in the end, Charles Taylor was convicted of 11 counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity and is serving a 50-year sentence today.
Mm. From what you've seen in these documents, what was the one that really kind of you felt was a smoking gun or really swayed you?
The question is all the series of connections. And first of all, keep in mind that crimes like torture by the regime in the whole series of its detention facilities and what's happening there, those are under the control of the state. And one can attribute responsibility under international law to high-level actors if they have notice of those crimes and they fail to take action to prevent or punish. So these are almost always better cases than the ones you get where the militia are doing something or even where bombing is going on, because there can be a question about what the bombs were aimed at. Mm. These are aimed at torturing and maiming, gouging out eyes, burning with the, as we heard, burning this child with a welding torch, committing these horrendous crimes by the regime. And then what the documentation shows us is the way in which these people were ordered in, the reports that go up the chain about how it was being done, and the orders that come back down. And then we have this whole extremely rich document trail, because you've got these different parts of this maze of a state structure that are each communicating about these acts. So we've got it at both ends in the middle of the linkage. So that's why this is so impressive.
Back to that question, what court would prosecute him?
That indeed is the challenge. We've had other situations where regimes were powerful and no one ever thought their leader would come to account, and that they were needed in peace processes, or they were needed for this or that, or they had powerful protectors. But the stronger the evidence you build, the more difficult it is for the world to sweep that under the rug.
Is there a possibility that with this evidence, or perhaps a bit more evidence, arrest warrants could be issued for Bashar al-Assad?
Well, again, the question is what court that they're issued in. Obviously, if you have national courts in other countries, generally they can't charge a sitting head of state. They can charge all sorts of other people whose names are on these documents and in the briefs that the Commission on International Justice and Accountability, this NGO group that was described in the Taib article, have developed. So for a chief of state, you need a court of international character. That requires an ICC or a UN tribunal, or it would require some kind of mixed court. And so we don't have that yet. On the other hand, this kind of evidence gives notice to the world that the day of justice has to arrive. I mean, we've accomplished it in other cases, and we found a way. And given what's happened and what continues to happen, we have to work to break down that door of justice and to make it possible to have judgment in a case like this one. What we have here is very strong evidence. What we need is a recognition that this evidence must be heard, and that we need to establish a court where it can be heard. And I think the stronger the evidence, the better the chance.
Stephen Rapp, the former U.S. Ambassador at Large for War Crimes, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Glad to talk today. Take care.